activity you like to do that complements something your wife enjoys so that you can spend more time together. If she likes to go to the gym and you like to play computer games, you get little quality time together. But if you're willing to go to the gym with her or take up something new you can do together, such as geocaching or gourmet cooking, you'll add a new dimension to your relationship. If you're a couple who have moved beyond the newlywed stage, it's likely that much of your time and conversation is focused on life's mechanics. When does the dog go to the vet? Where's the window spray? How much should you pay for a new garbage disposal? Try monitoring your conversations in order to make sure all your time and talk isn't swallowed up by your to-do list. Surprise her with two tickets to a movie you know she would particularly enjoy. Afterward, take her to dinner and ask her to share her review of the movie. If you're in the habit of praying as a couple, add a little additional time for togetherness. While you're spending quality time with God, spend quality time with each other. If your schedules permit, look for opportunities to take a snow day or summer vacation day. Forget what you had planned and do something, anything, spontaneous. Take turns selecting books to read. Designate pages or chapters to read individually on your own time, and then discuss the content during your quality time together, or read aloud to each other. Car trips tend to promote conversation between couples, so take a long drive. You might travel to a favorite restaurant 2 or 3 hours away, have lunch, and then drive back. If you run out of things to say, learn to enjoy silence together. Set a timer and agree not to say anything as you watch a sunset or walk through the woods. You have to do chores anyway, so why not make them a time for quality conversation? Share tasks like cleaning house and talk as you dust, mop, and put things away. Chapter 4. How to Become Fluent in Gift Giving. Love Language Number 3. Eric spent a year in Kelsey's friend zone before she agreed to go out with him. Since they were both big baseball fans, Eric took her to an Indianapolis Indians game for their first date. The Indians' minor league stadium allows fans to sit on grassy hills rather than outfield bleachers. Eric and Kelsey were enjoying a picnic dinner just beyond the left field fence when the Indians' first baseman drove a hanging curveball their way. Eric jumped up and made an impressive barehanded catch, his first home run grab ever. 2 days later, Kelsey found a gift-wrapped package outside her dorm room. She opened it and found a baseball in a small plastic display case, the kind collectors use. Taped to the inside of the case was a ticket stub from the game. Inscribed on the ball was the date of the game and these words: "First home run catch. Second best thing to happen to me that day." Within 2 years of their first date, Eric and Kelsey were married. Today, some 15 years later, that baseball, still in its display case, sits on Kelsey's bedroom dresser, where she can see it every day. Recently, one of her friends asked her which possession she would grab first if her house were on fire. Kelsey's reply: "The baseball Eric gave me." At a garage sale, that ball and its case might go for a buck, maybe a buck and a half. But Kelsey wouldn't part with it for 1,000 times that amount. Behold, the power of a thoughtful gift. The cart and the horse. If Kelsey's primary love language had been words of affirmation, quality time, acts of service, or physical touch, Eric's gift might have been met with a blank stare or a half-hearted thank you. But Eric rolled the dice on gift-giving and walked away a big winner. Kelsey was overwhelmed by the fact that he gave up his home run ball, wrote a heartfelt note, commemorated the date of their first outing as a couple, and packaged the whole thing in such a way that it stayed visible and protected, all for her. The fact that Eric could speak her love language so early in their relationship gave Kelsey hope that he might be the one. Turns out she was right. Not everyone picks up the language as quickly as Eric did. Then again, not everyone is as motivated to become fluent as Eric was. Of the five love languages, gift-giving is one of the most likely to raise an eyebrow or two. In some circles, drawing any connection between love and gifts is enough to inspire whispers of materialism, gold digging, or worse. That's why it's important to emphasize from the start which is the cart, gifts, and which is the horse, love. Love is what drives a husband to learn his wife's primary love language. His aim is to demonstrate his love in a way that she understands and appreciates. To be clear, the love between them is already there. He's not trying to earn his wife's affection by buying her expensive gifts. He's expressing what's in his heart in the way she experiences love most intensely. Likewise, a person whose primary love language is gift-giving is not necessarily a materialistic person. Her aim is not to amass a collection of valuables, but rather to surround herself with reminders of her loved one's affection. The cost and worth of the presents are incidental to her. When it comes to the gift-giving love language, it truly is the thought that counts. Tangible expressions. The connection between love and gifts is more deeply rooted than most people realize. How old were you the first time you picked a flower or a dandelion and gave it to your mom as a present, a way of saying, I love you? How many knickknacks did you create for your parents at camp, in Sunday school, or in art class? The instincts are there. Harnessing and perfecting those natural inclinations is the key to becoming fluent in the love language of gift-giving. The notion that delighted your parents all those years ago, and perhaps still does, runs strong in people whose primary love language is gift-giving. A gift is something they can hold in their hands as they say, look, he was thinking of me. Therein lies the appeal. You have to think of someone before you give her a gift. The gift itself is a symbol of that thought. It doesn't matter whether it costs money. What's important is that you thought of her, that you took the time to consider what would make her happy and then followed through. Storytellers. Want to add a little something extra to your gift? Give it a story. A stuffed bear holding a sign that says, I heart West Virginia is one thing. A stuffed, sign-wielding bear purchased in a gift shop on the very block where your wife's great-grandmother's house once stood, which you know because you did some genealogical research before your trip, is quite another. Of course, not every story needs to be so dramatic or involve such effort. A simple, I heard you say you wanted to try something new in the kitchen, so I bought you a Cajun cookbook. Or, I made a playlist of some of the new songs you've been singing along to lately will do nicely. An effective story-gift combo is one that gives your wife some insight into the way your mind works when it's thinking about her. Gifts are visual symbols of love. The importance of such symbols may be lost on non-native speakers of the gift-giving love language. The difference between the native and non-native mindsets can be seen in people's attitudes toward the most common visual symbol of love in our culture, the wedding ring. Most wedding ceremonies include the giving and receiving of rings. The person performing the ceremony says something to the effect of, these rings are outward and visible signs of an inward and spiritual bond that unites your two hearts in love that has no end. That's not meaningless rhetoric. Those words give power to the visual symbol of the union, especially where native speakers of gift-giving are concerned. That's why some people never take their ring off after the wedding. If gift-giving is your wife's primary love language, but not yours, she probably wears her ring more often and spends more time thinking about it than you do. She likely places great value on her ring and wears it with tremendous pride because you gave it to her as an enduring symbol of your love. She's also probably been moved by other gifts you've given her through the years. She views them as expressions of your love. What that means for you. To take that point one step further, without gifts as visual symbols, your wife may question your love. For some of you, the last sentence triggered alarm bells in your head, or the cha-ching of a cash register. Maybe you did a quick check to see if this chapter is being underwritten by Hallmark, ProFlowers, or K Jewelers. So let's reiterate the point made earlier. Generally speaking, a gift's impact has nothing to do with its cost or worth. Great gifts come in all sizes, colors, and shapes. Some are expensive, and others are free. If your wife's primary love language is gift-giving, the cost of the gift will matter to her only if it's greatly out of line with what you can afford or what you spend on yourself or others. If you live on a golf course in a gated community and treat yourself to a new car every year, you can't come home every week with gifts you picked up from a dollar store and expect them to convey genuine love and affection for your wife. If, on the other hand, your household finances are in dire shape, a well-chosen gift from a dollar store may speak $1 million worth of love. Gifts may be purchased, found, or made. If you see an interesting bird feather while you're out running and bring it home to your wife, guess what? You've given her an expression of love. A $5 greeting card that catches your eye and conveys your feelings would make an ideal gift. If your budget doesn't allow for a $5 card expenditure, a card designed and written by you on a piece of computer paper would make an equally ideal gift. What could be simpler? If your wife is consistently critical and unappreciative of the gifts you give, you may want to reevaluate. Gift-giving is almost certainly not her primary love language. Savers and spenders. Still, not everyone is convinced that gift-giving is a meaningful way to speak love. Some try to pass off their reluctance as financial wisdom. Each of us has particular thoughts about the purpose of money, as well as particular emotions associated with spending it. Some people have a spending orientation. They feel good about themselves when they're using money to buy things they need or want. Others have a saving and investing orientation. They feel good about themselves when they hold on to their money and make it work for them by investing wisely. If you're a spender by nature, you'll likely have little difficulty purchasing gifts for your wife. If you're a saver, though, you may experience some intellectual or emotional resistance to the idea. After all, if you don't purchase things for yourself, why should you purchase things for your wife? That kind of thinking makes such good financial sense that it can be hard to see how emotionally skewed it is. The truth is, if you're a saver, you are, in a sense, purchasing things for yourself. By holding on to your money, you're purchasing self-worth and security. You're using your assets to care for your own emotional needs. What you're not doing is meeting the emotional needs of your wife. If your wife's primary love language is gift-giving, you must recognize that buying gifts for her is the best long-range plan in your portfolio. You are investing in your relationship and filling your wife's emotional love tank. With a full love tank, she will likely reciprocate emotional love to you in a language you'll understand. That's what's known as a win-win. When both persons' emotional needs are met, your marriage will take on a whole new dimension. To invest in loving your wife is to invest in the bluest of blue-chip stocks. The perfect gift. We wouldn't waste a sidebar to suggest something as obvious as buying jewelry for your wife. However, we will suggest that you explore an often overlooked branch of the jewelry gift tree, charm bracelets and necklaces. The initial outlay for the bracelet or necklace itself may seem a little steep, but think of it as an investment. The charms themselves are what make the package such an ideal gift. They are relatively inexpensive, offer a variety of options, and allow you to personalize your gift over and over again. After, say, a memorable trip to Miami, you can buy a charm depicting the state of Florida. After playing couples softball together in a church league, you can buy a charm depicting a bat and ball. Over time, the charm bracelet or necklace will tell the story of your relationship, much to the delight of your wife. The gift of self. In some dialects of gift-giving, you'll find there is an intangible present that sometimes speaks more loudly than a gift that can be held in one's hand. I call it the gift of self or the gift of presence. Being there when your spouse needs you speaks loudly to the one whose primary love language is gift-giving. Sonia once said to me, "My husband loves softball more than he loves me." "Why do you say that?" I inquired. "On the day our baby was born, he played softball. I was lying in the hospital all afternoon while he played softball," she said. "Was he there when the baby was born?" "He stayed long enough for the baby to be born, but 10 minutes afterward he left. It was awful. It was such an important moment in our lives. I wanted us to share it together. I wanted Tony to be there with me." That baby was now 15 years old, and Sonia was talking about the event with all the emotion as though it had happened yesterday. I probed further. "Have you based your conclusion that Tony loves softball more than he loves you on this one experience?" "No," she said. "On the day of my mother's funeral, he also played softball." "Did he go to the funeral?" "Yes, he did. He went to the funeral, but as soon as it was over, he left to get to his game. I couldn't believe it. My brothers and sisters came to the house with me, but my husband was playing softball." Later, I asked Tony about those two events. He knew exactly what I was talking about. "I knew she would bring that up," he said. "I was there all through the labor, and when the baby was born, I took pictures. I was so happy, I couldn't wait to tell the guys on the team. But my bubble was burst when I got back to the hospital that evening. She was furious with me. I couldn't believe what she was saying. I thought she would be proud of me for telling the team." "And when her mother died?" "She probably didn't tell you that I took off work a week before she died and spent the whole week at the hospital and at her mother's house doing repairs and helping out. After she died and the funeral was over, I felt I had done all I could do. I needed a breather. I liked to play softball, and I knew that would help me relax and relieve some of the stress I'd been under. I thought she would want me to take a break. I had done what I thought was important to her, but it wasn't enough. She has never let me forget those 2 days. She says that I love softball more than I love her. That's ridiculous." He was a sincere husband who failed to understand the tremendous power of presence. In his wife's mind, his being there for her when she needed him was more important than anything else. Physical presence in the time of crisis is the most powerful gift you can give if your spouse's primary love language is gift-giving. Your body becomes the symbol of your love. Remove the symbol, and the sense of love evaporates. In counseling, Tony and Sonia work through the hurts and misunderstandings of the past. Eventually, Sonia was able to forgive him, and Tony came to understand why his presence was so important to her. You can avoid such heartache and years of resentment simply by reading your wife's verbal and nonverbal cues. If your wife says to you, "I really want you to be with me tonight, tomorrow, this afternoon," take her request seriously. From your perspective, the event may not seem important. Trust me, it is. And if you don't take it seriously, if you're less than responsive to her request, you may send a message to your wife without realizing it, a message you may regret for a long, long time. Speak up. If your primary love language is gift-giving and the physical presence of your wife is important to you, your first order of business is to verbalize your feelings. Don't make her guess what's important to you. Spell it out. Give her a chance to speak your love language fluently. The spirit of giving lies at the heart of love. All five love languages challenge us to give to our wives. However, for some people, gift-giving, visible symbols of love, speaks the loudest. It's a start. Let's say a guy recognizes the need for gifts in his relationship, but has little or no experience as a gift giver. Perhaps he grew up in a low-income family where presents were rarely handed out. Perhaps he's never been much of a shopper for himself or anyone else. Perhaps his own love language lies approximately 180 degrees from gift-giving. How might such a guy become fluent in a love language so foreign to him? A good first step would be to make a list of all the gifts he can think of that got a big reaction from his wife. They may be presents he'd given her or presents given by other family members or friends. A list like that would give him an idea of the kind of gifts his wife would enjoy receiving. If he kept the list handy and added to it as often as possible, he could use it as a reference when it's time to shop. If he's seriously worried about his gift-selecting prowess or lack thereof, he could recruit the help of family members who know his wife well. Gift-giving phrasebook. No one can be expected to master the love language of gift-giving overnight. If you need a gift idea and need it fast, try one of the following tried-and-true suggestions. The 12 days of Christmas are already established, but how about the 12 days of gifts for your wedding anniversary, your wife's birthday, Mother's Day, or some other special occasion? Photos are inexpensive gifts that become more cherished as time passes. They can be even more special if you collect them for a while and then present your wife with photo records of the growth of your child, the life of your pet, the seasons of her flower garden, and more. Consider some good now and later gifts. For example, a bird feeder, a needlepoint kit, or seeds for a vegetable garden will yield rewards for a long time to come. Give your wife the gift of a day. Sometime when you know she's free, take a day off and let her call the shots for what she wants to do, or give her the entire day to herself. Keep an eye open for spontaneous, unexpected gifts from street flower vendors, roadside fruit or craft dealers, or a favorite ice cream shop on a hot day. Make sure they're all things she would appreciate. If she loves gift shops or houseware stores, let her browse without your grousing or getting restless. If she has a favorite game show or reality program, think of ways you might provide a personalized version just for her. If she loves home design shows, for example, give her a budget and help from a friend and let her redesign one of the rooms in your house. If you have an artistic bent, create a rendering of her in charcoal, watercolors, oils, clay, or some other medium. When she is approaching a milestone event, special birthday, anniversary, notify old friends of hers whom she hasn't heard from in a while. Request simple, heartfelt gifts, poems, bookmarks, prayers for the special day. Keep them a secret until you present them to her at her big birthday bash. Have a star registered in your wife's name. Buy stock in a company your wife supports and let her follow the financial ups and downs over a period of time. Give handmade coupons for services your wife regularly requests, such as car washes, specific errands, and back rubs. Make sure to honor all coupons in a timely and cheerful manner. When money is tight, think of appropriate symbolic gifts. For example, instead of plane tickets, you might take your wife on a flight of fancy to daydream about what you would be doing together if money were no object, or dig out videos of past vacations and relive special moments without leaving the comfort of your home. Offer your gift of presence during an especially hard time in her life, perhaps when she's visiting a very sick friend, caring for an elderly parent, or dealing with a job crisis. When your wife is away on a business trip, church retreat, or weekend getaway with her best friend, hide a gift in her luggage or arrange to have something delivered to her hotel room. Add to the anticipation of a big gift by offering vague clues as to what it is, perhaps in the form of jigsaw puzzle pieces that eventually create a picture of the gift. Chapter 5, How to Become Fluent in Acts of Service, Love Language Number 4. Andre caught a glimpse of himself in the bathroom mirror and shook his head. What a sight! On his knees in front of a toilet, rubber gloves pulled up to his elbows, a can of cleanser in one hand and a scrub brush in the other. If the guys on his rugby team could see him now, check that. If his father could see him now. The old man was a firm believer in dividing household chores along gender lines. The husband mowed the lawn in the summer, shoveled snow in the winter, and fixed anything that was broken. The wife did everything else. Suddenly, Andre felt sorry for his dad. The old man probably never experienced the payoff that comes from completing a surprise act of service for his wife. Andre grinned as he thought about his own wife's reaction to his latest surprise act. She would come home to find not just a spotless bathroom, but a new shower curtain, rug, towel set, and toilet paper holder, the very ones she'd pointed out to him in a catalog and then mistakenly assumed he'd forgotten about. She'd scream, of course, hold her hand over her mouth in amazement, notice and comment on every little detail right down to the toothbrush holder that was no longer gunked up with dried toothpaste. Laugh in embarrassment as tears rolled down her cheeks, wrap her arms around him for a long, sensual hug, whisper in his ear how lucky she is to be married to such a caring, thoughtful, surprising, attractive man. Suddenly, Andre felt sorry for anyone who wasn't him. A hard-earned, happily ever after. You might conclude that Andre and his wife are a match made in love language heaven, and you'd be right, though it wasn't always that way. Andre didn't telepathically pick up on his wife's fondness for acts of service the first time they met. He wasn't some linguistic savant who started speaking her love language fluently right away. Andre and his wife endured years of doubt, frustration, annoyance, and confusion as they struggled to make their relationship work, to make their needs known to each other, and to find ways to meet those needs. In their darkest hours, they questioned whether they were really meant to be together. Even after Andre discovered his wife's love language, he struggled with learning acts of service. He argued that the things he was already doing, putting gas in the car, taking out the trash, bringing home the lion's share of their household income, should count as acts of service. He expected his wife to feel loved based on those things. In essence, he wanted her to change her needs to fit his solutions. It took a while for him to figure out, and then come to grips with, the kind of acts that meant most to her. Cleaning the bathroom, for one. His progress was slow but steady. With practice, and more than a little trial and error, Andre eventually became fluent in acts of service. And you can, too. In fact, we can break down the fluency strategy into three easy-to-remember parts. Impact, initiative, attitude. If any of these elements is missing or off-kilter, your attempts to communicate love to your wife through acts of service will be thwarted. Let's look first at the importance of impact. Deep impact. I've got some good news and some bad news for you. The bad news is you could spend an entire long weekend doing chores, raking leaves, preparing your lawn for winter, winding up hoses and putting them away, winterizing your cars, pulling Thanksgiving and Christmas decorations from the attic, putting weather strips on your windows and sliding doors, tuning up your snowblower, cutting logs for the fireplace, and not add a drop to your wife's love tank. The good news is, you could bring home Chinese takeout, clean the kitchen afterward, and then put the kids to bed by yourself on a night when she's facing a deadline at work or is just wiped out after a long day, and overflow that very same love tank. When it comes to acts of service, you're not judged by the amount of time you put in or even by how hard you work. You're judged by your effectiveness, the impact you have. Making an impact on your wife means working smarter, not harder. A starting pitcher in baseball may work on his delivery constantly, making sure the release point of his off-speed pitches matches that of his fastball. He may take hundreds of extra ground balls and line drives after practice in a quest to field his position better. He may study hours of film every night, learning the tendencies of various batters and base runners. In the end, though, he's judged by one criterion. Does he get batters out? If the answer is no, none of his other work makes much of a difference. What matters is whether he's effective where it counts. Andre didn't make that connection at first. He worked hard at the wrong tasks, and he failed to make a dent in his wife's love language needs. For someone who takes pride in his work, that can be a tough pill to swallow. Most of us are wired with an instinctive desire to prove our worth as husbands, providers, and caretakers. Beyond that, we want our work to mean something, and we want credit for the things we do. The way things used to be. Many people get married believing their spouse is already fluent in acts of service. They base their belief on the way the spouse acted while they were dating. Many of these people quickly discover that what two people do for each other before marriage is no indication of what they'll do after marriage. The process of falling in love can affect odd changes in our behavior and cause us to do things completely out of character. After marriage, we revert to being the people we were before we fell in love. That's when learning a new love language becomes necessary. In order to become fluent in acts of service, we need to kick that mindset to the curb. We need to let our wife guide us in determining what is and isn't an effective act. We need to let her instruct us on how to make an impact. What does love look like to your wife? What actions make her feel genuinely and spectacularly loved? The answer to these questions will guide your actions. Depending on her personality and your relationship history, she may or may not feel comfortable sharing the answers with you. You may need to put her at ease to help her recognize your genuine desire to meet her acts of service needs. Whatever makes your wife feel genuinely and spectacularly loved is where your focus and effort should go. One way to do that is to invite her to compile her ultimate honey-do list, the 4 or 5 acts of service that would mean the most to her. Her list might include a household chore she absolutely despises, an idea for taking some pressure off her, a way for her to free up some time for herself, a project that she's dreamed of for years, or other service suggestions. The list doesn't need to be comprehensive. It's just a starting point, a snapshot of your wife's current emotional needs landscape. Once you have it, though, treat it like the valuable resource it is. How do you say ASAP in acts of service? The transition from receiving your wife's to-do list to breaking ground on your first official act of service is critical. Think of it as a baton handoff in a 4x100-meter relay or a pit stop in the Indianapolis 500. Speed and execution are everything. Call it initiative, taking the fight to your wife's list instead of letting it come to you. You may have every intention of tackling the items on her list when you have the time, opportunity, and energy to do so. But in relationships, as in business, sports, and just about any other walk of life, good intentions will get you only so far. In order to make them count, you have to turn those good intentions into something tangible, something appreciable. Whatever goodwill you build up by encouraging your wife to share her ultimate to-do list with you will be squandered in no time if that list gets buried under a mountain of paperwork on your desk. The last thing you want is for your wife to have to remind you of the things you intended to do for her. That won't feel like love to her. Love is always freely given. It can't be demanded, cajoled, or coaxed from someone. That's why it's vital that you take the initiative in completing an act of service on your wife's list as soon as you possibly can. In doing so, you demonstrate your future intentions and give her a sense of just how important her emotional well-being is to you. The most logical thing to do is choose the easiest item on the list and complete that. And if time is of essence, there's nothing wrong with taking that route. If time is not a factor, however, if you have the resources and wherewithal to do something bigger and bolder, your absolute best strategy is to tackle the item on the list that will mean the most to her, the one closest to her heart. Take on the task and get it done, and done well. Show your wife good results instead of good intentions. When the first item is finished, turn your attention to the rest of the list. Easier said than done, right? Especially with so many other things vying for your time, attention, and energy. The key to initiating acts of service is to make it a 3D experience with drive, discipline, and dedication. Drive speaks to your motivation. To keep the reason for your acts of service fresh in your mind, tape your favorite picture of your wife along with her to-do list on your bathroom mirror or someplace else where you'll see it every day. Every time you look at the photo, think of how you can show love to the woman in it through an act of service, whether it's an idea from her list or a surprise that you know she'll appreciate. Discipline refers to the scheduling and prioritizing necessary to accomplish some of the more ambitious projects on the list. 6 large garden boxes aren't built, set up, and filled in a day. A custom closet organizer can't be installed in an hour or two after work. Some acts of service are going to cut into your already busy schedule. Some may require you to postpone or sacrifice your own chores or pastimes. Dedication is making sure that what started gets finished. Dedication is staying committed to an act of service until it can be presented as a token of love. Dedication is what prevents would-be demonstrations of affection from becoming partially completed reminders of more pressing priorities. Remember, every delay or aborted attempt to complete an act of service sends a clear message to your wife. This isn't important to me. Service with a smile. Just as crucial as the act of service itself is the attitude with which you perform it. In fact, the right thing done with the wrong attitude can actually cause more harm than good. If your wife senses resentment or irritation in you while you're performing an act of service for her, she won't feel affirmed. She'll feel like an imposition, a bother, a drain on your time and energy. Where's the love in that? For maximum impact, your acts of service should be done with eagerness and excitement to do something meaningful for your wife. They should be done with good humor. Even the ones that take you way, way, way out of your comfort zone. And they should be done with humility. Don't call attention to yourself while you're performing them. Don't make a big deal about them afterward. Refuse to play the hero card or the martyr card. Remember who you're doing them for and why. If acts of service is your primary love language, keep in mind that love is a choice and cannot be coerced. You can't use criticism or demands to get what you need. With enough bullying, you may get acquiescence from your wife. She may do what you want, but it will certainly not be an expression of love. A better option is to give guidance by making requests. I wish you would keep the house picked up, sort the mail, phone my mother more often. But you cannot create or demand the will to love. Each of us must decide daily to love or not to love our wives. The Doormat Conundrum. Of the five love languages, acts of service seems to have the most potential for abuse, or at least the perception of abuse. A wife with less than noble intentions could conceivably convince her husband to do just about anything for her, all in the name of love. One fed-up wife put it this way, "I have served him for 20 years. I have waited on him hand and foot. I have been his doormat while he ignored me, mistreated me, and humiliated me in front of my friends and family. I don't hate him. I wish him no ill. But I resent him, and I no longer wish to live with him." For two decades, that woman performed acts of service for her husband. But they weren't expressions of love. They were done out of fear, guilt, and resentment. How many other well-meaning men and women have similar stories? How many of them are former or current members of the doormat society? A doormat is an inanimate object, something you step on, wipe your feet on, and kick around occasionally. It has no will of its own. It doesn't object to the way it's treated. It serves its purpose, period. When we treat our wives as objects, or even give them cause to feel as though they're being treated as objects, we eliminate the possibility of love. Manipulation by guilt, "If you were a good wife, you would do this for me," is not the language of love. Coercion by fear, "You will do this or you will be sorry," is alien to love. Likewise, when a husband's genuine efforts to speak love through acts of service are regularly met with dissatisfaction or indifference by his wife, a reevaluation may be in order. As we mentioned earlier, becoming fluent in a second love language takes time. Mistakes are inevitable. Not every idea will work, especially if the two of you aren't yet on the same page. If, on the other hand, you perform the acts of service that your wife said mean the most to her, and you consistently get criticism or no reaction at all from her, it's a pretty safe bet that acts of service isn't your wife's love language after all. Acts of Service Phrasebook. You've committed yourself to becoming fluent in acts of service so that you can express love to your wife. Good for you. As a non-native speaker, you'll find there are times when you're stuck for inspiration. Here are some ideas to get you unstuck. Many men know of a chore or chores that their wife has already given up hope of ever seeing done. Surprise her and get the job done. If she asks you to do something, do it. Don't make her repeat herself. Plan to get up a half hour earlier or stay up a half hour later each day for a week and use that time to plan and perform acts of service for your wife. Think of something she would never expect. Take the dog to the groomer. Reorganize the basement to make room for her home business files. Clean out the pantry and kitchen cabinets. Make dinner. Really cook it and don't forget the vegetables. Then clean up. And don't forget to wipe the stove. Take your wife shopping in the Yellow Pages or online. Let her pick out a needed service, whether it's gutter cleaning, painting, or carpet steaming. Think of your wife's most frequent complaints and go overboard in preventing them again in the near future. Make yourself accessible to her in times of extended grief, such as the death of a parent or pet. Supporting her during tough times can be a great act of service. Don't always announce what you do for your wife. Occasionally perform a covert act of service without saying anything and see how long it takes her to notice. If your wife always seems rushed in the mornings, find a way to give her a few more minutes. Take an earlier or later shift in the bathroom. Pack the kids' lunches. Get the coffee ready. Make a list of the skills and abilities your friends possess. Which ones can you call on to perform an act of service for your wife that you're incapable of doing? If your wife enjoys what you do for her so much that she wants to get in on the fun, work together to perform acts of service for other people you know. Before you know it, you'll find that you are spending quality time together while you plan. Consider how you might serve someone or something your wife loves, whether it's a friend, a family member, a fellow churchgoer, or a favorite cause. Run interference for your wife during one of her favorite TV shows. Take care of all the phone calls, kid emergencies, and so on. If you know of other men listening to this book, exchange ideas with them to come up with new, workable relationship strategies. Chapter 6. How to Become Fluent in Physical Touch. Love Language Number 5. As a kid, how often did you play touch football in your neighborhood, arm wrestle with your dad, thumb wrestle with your brother, play tag at recess, dole out noogies, wet willies, wrist burns, and Hertz donuts, play Marco Polo in a swimming pool? For many guys, physical touch is a huge part of growing up. Left to their own devices, boys can make a contact sport out of any game, activity, or car ride. As we get older, we're taught to respect other people's personal space and keep our hands to ourselves. Aside from handshakes, high fives, and the occasional side hug, our interpersonal interaction as adults is largely contact-free. We touch no one, and no one touches us. Sometimes that hands-off approach extends to marriage, too. After the honeymoon period, when the newlyweds can't get enough of each other, many couples settle into a pattern of ever-increasing physical distance. The demands of a busy world, as well as any number of emotional issues, conspire to keep husband and wife at arm's length from each other. For roughly 4/5 of married people, that distance may not seem like a glaring problem. That number assumes a relatively equal distribution of primary love languages among the general population. Their love tanks are filled by words of affirmation, quality time, gift-giving, or acts of service. They may enjoy physical touch, but they don't need it to feel loved and cared for. Their emotional well-being isn't tied to it. This chapter is dedicated to the other 20%, the spouses whose primary love language is physical touch. The touchables. If you or your wife is a foodie, chances are you've heard of super tasters, people whose sense of taste is so acute that they experience food differently than most other people do. For a super taster, sugar is sweeter, sodium is saltier, fat is creamier, and bitterness is unbearable. Some super tasters can detect even the slightest differences in the fat content of milk and other foods. The jury is out as to whether super-tasting abilities are a blessing or a curse. On the plus side, with their enhanced taste buds, super-tasters can isolate and enjoy the many ingredients that go into their favorite foods. Super-tasters make excellent food critics. On the minus side, super-tasters are repulsed by certain foods, including healthy dark green vegetables that other people enjoy. If your wife's primary love language is physical touch, think of her as a super toucher. She can sense love and affection, among other things, in the slightest arm squeeze or back caress. Physical contact that wouldn't even register with most people has the potential to thrill her, change her mood, brighten her day, and, most importantly, make her feel loved and cared for. The intensity of her tactile experience plays a large role in her relationships. The closer she is to someone, whether it's a friend or a family member, the more she enjoys physical touch with that person, a bear hug with her brother, a kiss on the cheek from her mother, an arm around her shoulder from her best friend. Likewise, the withholding of physical touch by those closest to her has the potential to cause her more pain and anxiety than most non-native speakers of her love language can imagine. From her perspective, physical touch can make or break a relationship. It can communicate love or hate. A slap in the face is shocking to anyone, but it would be devastating to someone whose primary love language is physical touch. A tender hug communicates love and affection to most people, but it shouts love to those who speak physical touch. The thought process of such a person goes like this. Whatever there is of me resides in my body. To touch my body is to touch me. To withdraw from my body is to distance yourself from me emotionally. Even people who speak other love languages can understand that thinking to a certain degree. Whether we realize it or not, most of us adhere to certain physical touch expectations in our culture. To deviate from them is to invite scrutiny and misunderstanding. How many times a week do you shake hands with clients, fellow church members, golf partners, and casual acquaintances? In our culture, shaking hands is a way of communicating openness and friendliness to another person. If you extend your hand to someone and he leaves you hanging by refusing to shake it, you'll likely assume one of three things. The guy is a raging jerk. He has no interest in getting to know you. Things are not right in your relationship. Your reaction to the snub will depend on who's doing the snubbing. If it's an opponent you just beat in a pickup basketball game, you probably won't give it a second thought. If it's your boss, you may start to panic, wondering what you've done wrong and when the hammer's going to drop. And so it goes for the wife who speaks physical touch as a primary love language. When that touch isn't forthcoming, she takes it personally. She may lose self-esteem. She may worry about the state of her friendships and relationships. She may feel lonely, even when she's surrounded by friends and loved ones. As her husband, her primary source of love and affirmation, the responsibility for giving her the physical touch she desires is yours. Some might call that pressure. You can choose to look at it as a challenge and an opportunity. Taking stock. If your kids or your friends' kids or your nieces or nephews play high school sports, you may be familiar with baseline concussion tests. If not, here's how they work. Before the season starts, the athlete takes a computer-based test that measures reaction time, memory capacity, speed of mental processing, and executive functioning of the brain. The test serves as a document of how the athlete's brain works when it's healthy. If the athlete suffers a concussion during the season, doctors can then re-administer the test and compare the new results with the baseline test. That point of comparison allows them to determine where damage has been done so they can plan their treatment accordingly. That same principle, in reverse, can be applied to learning your wife's love language. If you're serious about becoming fluent in physical touch, you may want to consider conducting a baseline test of your current physical touch relationship with your wife. At the end of a typical weekday, after your wife has gone to bed, do a mental review of your physical interaction with her that day. Write down every time you kissed her, gave her a hug, held her hand, put your arm around her, initiated foot-to-foot contact under the table, grabbed her around the waist, gave her a high five, playfully wrestled with her, rubbed her shoulder, stroked her hair, caressed her back, had any other meaningful, purposeful, affectionate physical contact with her. Be as precise and comprehensive as you can in compiling your list. Resist the urge to inflate the numbers to make yourself look better. Remember, you're just looking for baseline figures, points of comparison to use later. Besides, there's no reason for anyone but you to see your list. Once you have a fairly concrete idea of how much physical touch you provide your wife on any given day, you can begin looking for areas in which you can do better. For example, If you find there are one or two types of touches that you go to over and over again, you might look at some other types of touches that are underrepresented on your list and consider trying them more often. Crunch your numbers, set your goals, and plan your strategy. Once your strategy is in place, mark some dates in your calendar for additional self-evaluations to check your progress. Compare them to your baseline figures to see where you're improving and where you need more improvement. Nice touch. Anatomically speaking, physical touch may be the easiest love language of all to begin learning. The human body was designed with touch receptors throughout. You could touch your wife lovingly almost anywhere on her body, theoretically. In reality, not all touches are created equal. Some will bring more pleasure to her than others. Your best instructor is the one being touched, of course. In this case, your wife. After all, she's the one you're seeking to love. She knows best what she perceives as a loving touch. Don't insist on touching her in your way and in your time. Learn to speak her love dialect. Like it or not, your wife may find some touches uncomfortable or irritating. To continue using those touches is to communicate the opposite of love, to suggest that you're not sensitive to her needs and that you care little about her perceptions of what's pleasant. The fact that a certain kind of touch brings pleasure to you doesn't mean it will or should bring pleasure to your wife. The only touches available to you are the ones that bring pleasure to your wife. Some love touches are explicit and demand your full attention. Sexual foreplay and intercourse would certainly fall into this category. More on these later. A sensual back rub would also qualify. Explicit love touches usually involve more time and effort on your part, not only where the actual touching is concerned, but also in preparing and understanding how to communicate love to your wife in that way. If a back massage communicates love loudly to your wife, then any time, money, and energy you spend in learning to be a good masseur will be well invested. Other love touches are implicit and require only a moment. These would include putting your hand on your wife's shoulder as you pour her a cup of coffee, or rubbing your body against hers as you pass in the kitchen. Implicit love touches require little time but much thought, especially if physical touch is not your primary love language and if you didn't grow up in a touching family. Sitting close to each other as you watch your favorite TV shows requires no additional time, but it may communicate your love loudly. Touching your wife as you walk through the room where she's sitting takes only a moment. Touching each other when you leave the house, and again when you return, may involve only a brief kiss or hug, but it will speak volumes to your wife. Once you discover that physical touch is the primary love language of your wife, you are limited only by your imagination when it comes to expressing love. Brainstorming new ways and places to touch can be an exciting challenge. If you've never been an under-the-table toucher in the past, you may find that secretive contact adds a spark to your dining out. If you're not accustomed to holding hands in public, you may find that you can fill your wife's emotional love tank simply by strolling through a parking lot hand in hand. If you don't normally kiss as soon as you get into the car together, you may find that it greatly enhances your travels. Hugging your wife before she goes shopping not only expresses love, but it may bring her home sooner. Try new touches in new places and let your wife give you feedback on whether she finds it pleasurable. Remember, she has the final word. You are learning to speak her love language. A category unto itself. Surely a red-blooded, testosterone-driven man can be forgiven for smiling slyly when he discovers that his wife experiences love primarily through physical touch. That's like hitting the love language lottery, isn't it? After all, physical touch does include sex, right? Right? Perhaps. Not necessarily. It depends on your wife. Some wives may indeed find emotional fulfillment from the physical intimacy of lovemaking. Other wives may put sex in a separate category from other kinds of physical touch. Either way, it's important to remember whose needs are in focus here. The purpose of becoming fluent